while demons prowl the dark, just beyond the fire's glow, the poet stirs a pot of words and changes lead to gold. Thank you.
That was Elizabeth Gordon McKim, one of several literary artists who read poems by Charles Coe in his honor at a memorial celebration of his life at the Boston Public Library on Saturday, April 11th. Charles Coe was a vibrant, beloved author, poet, and musician who was a pillar in the Boston literary community. He was a longtime board member of the New England Poetry Club and also worked for the Mass Cultural Council. He was humorous and wise and lifted the spirits of anyone who came in contact with him. Several hundred people were in attendance, paying tribute to this gentle and great man who left us suddenly and too soon last November. The fact that he was beloved was obvious when speaking to friends and even to those who only knew him through his writing. Ken Mervis was one of his personal friends.
Charles was a very good friend, and I suspect almost everybody here would say Charles was a very good friend. He was a hilarious, thoughtful, ridiculously smart, soulful person who was always absolutely wonderful to be with. Just a good guy all the time. There was going to be a lot of depth and a lot of silliness all at the same time.
Oh, my name is John Emery.
And how do you know Charles?
He and my wife became colleagues at the Massachusetts Cultural Council. And shortly after she started working there, I was asking her questions about the place, including, you know, how are the people there? She said, well, I like them a lot. And there's this guy across the aisle who shoots rubber bands at me. And that was Charles. And shortly afterwards, I met him at a reading, and we became friends ever since. And I was just saying to them that, appropriate to the occasion, there's a lot of hugging going on at this event, because Charles was a hugger. And just a terrific friend. You know, my memories of Charles is meeting him at the door when he would come over for dinner. And I would stick out my hand to shake his, and he would brush it aside and say, hug, hug, hug. And we would.
Some of Charles Coe's poems were incorporated into a musical project called Symphony of Crickets, taken from one of Charles's earlier poems, with jazz saxophonist Ken Field. And the two of them, along with others, performed this evolving work several times over the past few years. Ken reflected on that.
It was such a joy to dwell in Charles's personality and Charles's poetry for that time, and I'm just so grateful for that opportunity.
And you helped set some of his poetry to music.
We incorporated music into the project, and he had so many poems that were oriented around music, about his experience with different kinds of music, different styles of music. He was so broadly experienced with different kinds of music, and we put different music that was inspired by those poems into the project, and we played together.
So my name is Ina Fox. One of the things I most enjoyed working with him, he did a project called What You Don't Know About Me, which was collecting the stories of longtime residents of Mission Hill and sort of surprising things to learn about the person, because that's what Charles was like. He loved learning about people. I live in Roxbury, just across the street from Mission Hill, but he asked if I wanted to participate because I told him some funny or interesting story, and I ended up participating, and it was beautiful. And anyway, many wonderful memories, many memories also of eating in Chinatown, dumplings and Chinese dumplings. So I really, really miss him, his sense of humor, the way he brought people together.
That was Ina Fox, a visual artist and writer. She was one of 10 people chosen to read some of Charles's poems at the event. She read the aforementioned Symphony of Crickets.
I owned one suit as a child. A reddish-brown, wide whale corduroy number with red and gold paisley fake silk lining that one Christmas mother intentionally purchased two sizes too big. You'll grow into it, she replied to my whined objections. It was made of cheap, heavy fabric that bent only grudgingly at elbows and knees. I was Frankenstein's monster stomping stiff leg through the forest, chased by torch-wielding villagers and their determined bloodhounds. And the pants rubbed with humiliating ferocity. I was a walking symphony of crickets. I wore my suit the day in eighth grade I took two buses alone to hear Isaac Stern perform with the Indianapolis Symphony. I was studying violin and would spend hours in the library, headphones on, listening to his records. I'd saved enough for my paper route to buy a ticket, and when I got to the hall, I climbed to my seat high in the back of the balcony, one brown face awash in a sea of white, in my little cheap suit, listening to the maestro, my crickets and I, transfixed and silent.
Thank you.
The event was organized and emceed by filmmaker, PBS producer, and multimedia artist Roberto Mighty. He gave some opening remarks and introduced each reader.
He was always writing and reading poetry, whether he was on a stage or not, you know, at dinner parties, whatever. And since he's passed away, I've met a lot of people who felt very, very close to Charles. And we all did. And I say that he brought us all together in life. And look at this. He's still bringing people together. And now, one of my missions is to make sure that more and more and more people know about Charles's writing. They're not going to get a chance to meet Charles, but they're going to get a chance more and more to know about his writing, which is nonpareil. It's fantastic. So I'm now proud tonight to introduce several distinguished writers themselves and readers who have each chosen one of their favorite short poems or short pieces by Charles. First up is Helen Elaine Lee, whom I actually met at one of Charles's garlic parties many years ago. Helen's 2023 novel, Pomegranate, won the Farrell Grumley Literary Award. She served on the board of Penn New England for a decade and is currently professor post-tenure in comparative media studies and writing at MIT. Today, Helen will be reading Opening Acts from Charles's All Sins Forgiven, Poems for My Parents.
As I reread his Facebook posts, I was struck by their range, the surprising and funny incidents, political insights, homages to other writers, and stories from his life that got to the heart of so many truths, including the inequalities on which this country was built and which continue to pollute its promise. He posted this piece, Opening Acts, from his 2013 collection, All Sins Forgiven, Poems for My Parents, on Facebook with the heading Something for Father's Day on June 15th, 2025. Opening Acts. It was a few months before I was due to be born. Father was stationed at Fort Bliss, and since a married man could live with his family off base when not on duty, my mother and sister had come to Texas to join him. But the late summer, South Texas heat and humidity, the dust, the enormous bugs, the omnipresent smell of chili, the endless onslaught of mariachi and country music had in the end been too much for Mother. She had to go back home, back to Indianapolis. Father bought two plane tickets, but Mother had never flown, had always been terrified of airplanes, and stood frozen at the gate of the El Paso airport. He rubbed her back and murmured, "You'll be in your mama's living room tonight, drinking lemonade." He gently took her elbow, tried to ease her onto the tarmac, but she wouldn't budge. "It looks like a vulture," she whispered, staring at the plane, "a big silver vulture." So Father exchanged the plane tickets for train tickets for a two-day ride in the sweltering, non-air-conditioned Negro car where sympathetic porters gave my sister towels dipped in ice water to wipe my mother's face. At every jerkwater stop along the way, local whites stared through the windows as if to say, "Niggers, don't get off here." Father couldn't get Army leave until Christmas when he saw his 3-month-old son for the first time. These are the facts, but I always imagined a different story, like an old black and white movie. Father pacing the waiting room, smoking cigarette after cigarette down to the filter, then getting the news and passing out cigars to the other men. And later, bouquet in hand, taking the stairs 2 at a time, no patience for the elevator, the flower petals that settled on the metal steps, marking his trail to a new world.
Lloyd Schwartz, the poet laureate of Somerville, has received fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation, the NEA, and the Academy of American Poets. He was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Criticism and was the classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix. Lloyd is going to read When a White Boy Plays the Blues from Charles Coe's Memento Mori. Lloyd.
When a white boy plays the blues. A white boy who plays the blues for a black audience is like a brother pulled over for driving while black, an immediate object of suspicion. When a particular tall, skinny white boy took the stand on a particular Chicago summer night in a particular neighborhood club, with cheesy, splintered, fake wood paneling and sputtering neon beer sign in the window, 2 of the letters burnt out. In this joint where no fresh-faced, logo-covered tourists lined up outside for a taste of blues Disneyland, the brothers waited with folded arms to see what he could do. We didn't care about chops. Any pimply-faced first-year conservatory student can play rings around muddy waters. We were listening not for notes, but for music. And if he turned out to be a pretender, we were looking for clues to identify the specific nature of the crime. But when he started playing, we were surprised. The notes that poured from his guitar and throat weren't dazzling, but they were true. Water from some well we couldn't find on a map, but we recognized the taste. So we clapped after the first time, and he glanced at his drummer with pleasure and relief. As his set went on and he got looser, folks started to clap and grin. The waitress at the bar did a little 2-step shuffle while she waited for her drinks. Some guy with a gold tooth played percussion on a beer bottle with a set of keys. The verdict was in. It was clear we all belonged in this place, on this hot night, with our cold beers, that we were all, in our own ways, outsiders, together, faces pressed to the glass of the American dream.
One of the readers who knew Charles Coe well was Dean Stevens of the Community Church of Boston, which is located right across the street from this event. Dean read Charles's poem, A Woman's Laughter.
I'm very glad to read this poem because it's about my very favorite piece of music recording, Bill Evans' The Complete Village Vanguard Recordings, 1961, recorded in almost empty Village Vanguard on a series of Sunday afternoons, and featuring the most amazing bass player named Scott LaFaro. You wouldn't believe, 2 weeks after the recording, he was killed in a car crash. So Charles and Scott, don't do this on us. We have to stay here and keep on going. This is called A Woman's Laughter. On a recording of the Bill Evans Trio live at the Village Vanguard, late June 61, during a slow, haunting version of I Loves You, Porgy, at the quietest moment, in the background, soft but clear, a woman's laughter. At first, the sound seems jarring, even sacrilegious, but then again, a jazz club's not a concert hall. Listeners in polite rows, knees together, waiting to cough in the space between the movements. Jazz is cash registers and clinking glasses and chairs scraping the floor. And besides, it's a pleasant laugh, full of promise, easy to see her hand reach out to rest on her companion's arm, easy to catch the whiff of lilac or lavender. Always so many worlds within worlds. In one world, a man who follows Evans from gig to gig sits at the bar alone, transfixed, ice melting in the forgotten drink. In one world, the bartender counts his cash while dreaming of the waitress's embrace. In one world, a woman's laughter. In one world, Evans leans over the keys, oblivious to all but the slow heartbeat bass, the splash of brushes on cymbals and snares, fingers poised for what seems like forever, before they settle gently on the final chord. Farewell, Charles.
Charles not only spoke to grown-ups, but he also was a great teacher. He was a great teacher. Raise your hand if you'd been mentored or taught by Charles. Look at this. And those among that group of people who just raised their hands, not all of them were spring chickens, right? So he was totally dedicated to helping others to learn. But he also taught young people. An outstanding young man was a student at the time at Newton North High School. Ian Hannon is now a sophomore at Northeastern University. He's currently pursuing a major in civil engineering. He took Charles's poetry workshop at Newton North High School in 2021. Ian will read, "I Wish I'd Held My Father's Hand," from Charles Coe's new and selected works. Ian?
Hello. So, as you probably all know, I'm Ian Hayden, current student at Northeastern University. I want to just explain before I get into the poem of how Charles and I met. We met during one of his poetry sessions in my English class during my sophomore year. He and I instantly connected during the class. Unexpectedly, what seemed to bond our connection was over a game called Minecraft. Charles is a very knowledgeable guy who was always curious about things he did not understand. When I told him I was building a mega city during my spare time when I'm not doing any schoolwork, it caught his attention to learn more about the game. I showed him pictures, videos, and even drawings of new plans to expand my city, which really excited him. During each class, he would say, "Hi Ian, how are you? How's Minecraft City coming along?" One day, he proposed an idea to add to my city. My city had everything, but was missing something. A subway system. I took his idea to heart and worked on the first subway system in my city. He was shocked to see the finished product. I can only imagine what his reaction would be today that now my city has 4 separate subway systems. I Wish I Held My Father's Hand. By Charles Coe. My father put what he wanted to buy on the drugstore counter and said a polite good afternoon to the young white clerk, who didn't return the greeting or meet his eye, just stared at the items as if father had dumped a bucket of kitchen scraps and then with exquisite slowness began to ring them up. It was an ordinary day in Indiana in the early 60s. Everywhere a black man went, he had to bite his tongue. Looking back over the years, I wish I could go back to that afternoon when my father stood quiet and still while that punk tried to put him in his place. I wish I could have caught his eye, delivered the silent message that it understood what he had to go through every day to keep the peace, to raise his family. I wish I held my father's hand.
Emmanuel Opang Yerbwa is Boston's poet laureate and a librarian. He was a rare person at this event for never having met Charles Coe, but nonetheless was very taken by Charles's warmth and dignity so well expressed in his writing.
The poem that I'm going to read is also from the book that a couple folks have referenced today, All Sins Forgiven. It's the first poem in the book. It's titled DNA. What really moved me about this poem as I was reading it, and I think what is also moving me today, is that it is grappling with both the existence of grief and inheritance, and how grief and inheritance are kind of perpetually mixed and are always there for us to touch upon and access. The poem is titled DNA. DNA by Charles Coe. The young woman on the bus wearing headphones has a mole on her neck. Perhaps the same mole in the same place on some ancient ancestor. Itch with sweat as she crawled on hands and knees through the king's garden, back bent, pulling weeds. I know someone whose husband died a month before their baby's birth. Years later, she had to turn away as her teenage son brushed the hair from his girlfriend's face was the same gesture as the father he had never known. There are mysteries greater than the birth of stars. That sound you hear the moment before sleep is not the wind, but your own flesh and a timeless, whispered conversation with itself.
Reggie O'Hare Gibson is the inaugural Poet Laureate of Massachusetts. He has performed, taught, and lectured at schools, universities, theaters, and various other venues on two continents and in seven countries, including Havana, Cuba. Reggie will read Teaching My Imaginary Son to Fish from Charles Coe's book, All Sins Forgiven, Poems for My Parents. Thank you, Reggie.
Never take fishing too seriously. Find a shade tree by a creek bank to lean against on a sunny day and with a mild breeze blowing. Toss your line into the water and set aside for a while, the cares of the day. Never move too fast. In fact, try to move as little as possible. And remember, sometimes your best days fishing will be the ones you go home empty-handed. These are lessons my father taught me, not in words, but in the way he'd whistle. Whistle while unraveling a tangled line, or laugh when some big catfish slipped the hook. I am the end of my father's line, with no one but you to teach those things I am only now beginning to understand. And I struggle with his final lesson, the mere fact of his absence, an idea that wriggles in my grasp like a worm. I can't seem to thread onto the hook.
Well, my name is Reggie O'Hare Gibson. I am the Poet Laureate of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And I've known Charles for about 23 years or so when I moved here to Massachusetts about 26 years ago. I can't really remember how I met him. It's almost like I've always just known him and he's always sort of been around. And some of the times about with him that I remember most is being at his home. He would always love to cook for people and to cook and do poetry, tell stories. And he was always just a welcoming individual. He was trying to widen the circle and bring people into it. For myself, and I'm going to say this about his work, that it's always something I feel often, which is something of a mixture of the heart cracking and ice thawing, a kind of sound that goes with it. And part of my poetry evangelism has been to think about what is it that makes us feel, what is it that brings us into cracks the ice around us, and what is it that brings us into a space of warmth with one another. And I like to think about it as poets as being secular priests who are attempting to create spaces for sacred citizenship. And I think that no one that I can think of exhibited and illustrated that, lived that, more than Charles Coe.
There were many other poems read and many stories shared, both formally from the stage and informally among those who came out to the event and mingled just outside the auditorium at its conclusion. Reporting from the Boston Public Library Main Branch, I am Chuck Brezina.